trying to write a book, no progress. He sleeps in the backyard, chases flies, tries to eat them. We take long walks through the hills. We watch TV on our futon. We get food from the store at the bottom of the hill. I like canned ravioli and fruit punch. Cassius likes beef-flavored kibble. It's afternoon. I'm sitting at my desk, drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, trying to work. Cassius is on the futon watching a soap opera. We hear a car stop in front of the house. Cassius looks over at me. I shrug, tell him I don't know who it is. We hear voices. Cassius looks at the door. There's a knock. I stand, walk to the door. Cassius stands, walks to the door. I ask, who is it? Cassius barks. Leonard speaks.
Open the door, my son.
I open the door. Leonard and Snapper stand in front of me. Leonard speaks.
Your new house is a fucking palace.
I laugh. Come on in. They step inside. Cassius greets them both with a kiss on the hand. He knows them. They say hello to him. I speak. You want something to drink?
What do you have?
I got coffee, and I got some beer and cola in the fridge. Leonard speaks.
Cola, please.
I look at Snapper. He speaks.
Why you got beer?
In case someone comes over and wants to drink it.
It don't bother you having it here?
I could give a shit. If I were gonna get drunk, I'd drink something a lot stronger than fucking beer. He laughs.
I gotta drive. I'll have a cola, too.
I get the colas from the fridge, hand them to Leonard and Snapper. Speak. What are you guys doing here? Leonard speaks.
You never invited us up, so we decided to stop by.
Snapper speaks.
It hurt a little, kid. The no-invite thing.
I speak. I figured you knew there's an open invitation, and I figured you'd stop by when you wanted to, whether there was an invitation or not. Leonard speaks.
You're right. We would.
Snapper speaks.
Invitations are still nice, though.
I speak. From now on, you're invited whenever you want. Leonard speaks.
You got any plans tonight?
Nope.
Cassius have any?
I look at Cassius, who is back on the futon. You got any plans tonight, big boy? Cassius looks up, doesn't say anything. I look back at Leonard, speak. I think he's free. Leonard speaks.
Good. You're coming with us.
Where are we going?
Las Vegas. I'm getting rid of my place there. I want to show you a night on the town before I leave.
You're moving?
Going to live at the beach house full time.
I look at Snapper. You moving too?
I got a girlfriend in Vegas. I'm probably going to split time between the two places.
You got a girlfriend?
Don't sound so surprised. Lots of women like me.
Leonard speaks.
She's nice. Works as an accountant for one of the casinos.
I speak. Can I meet her? Snapper speaks.
Maybe. I'll see what she's doing tonight.
Leonard speaks.
If we get there by tonight, come on, let's go.
And you're sure Cassius can come?
Does he want to come?
I look at Cassius. Speak. You want to go to Vegas, Cassius? He looks up at me again. I look back at Leonard. He doesn't know those words. I've got to ask him another way. I turn back to Cassius.
You want to go bye-bye in the car, big boy?
Cassius immediately jumps off the couch, runs over to me, starts panting, turning in circles. I look back at Leonard. Do I need anything?
Everything will be taken care of.
Cool. I put Cassius on a leash. We walk out of my house, get into Leonard's Mercedes, start driving. The drive is simple. As soon as we're out of Los Angeles, it's one long road that cuts through open, desolate desert. Leonard says he wants to set the mood, so we listen to Frank Sinatra. Cassius sticks his face out the window, occasionally brings it back into the car and snorts and sneezes, immediately sticks it back out. The drive takes 4.5 hours if you drive the speed limit. After 3, we start to see a dim glow hovering along the horizon. Leonard points it out, speaks.
There it is. That mean and wondrous wench. The best place and worst place in America. A place where dreams come true, where people are destroyed. A place that doesn't care about the past and is a vision of the future. Where capitalism is displayed in all of its glory and horror. Where everything and anything can be bought, sold, traded, or stolen. where some of the smartest and most ambitious people in the country come to make their fortunes. Where some of the absolute worst and most despicable people in the country come to make their fortunes. It is corrupt, dirty, and disgusting, and in 500 years, its massive buildings, thought of as garish and ridiculous, will be considered marvels. It is a giant carnival devoted to the glory of money and everything money can do, both good and evil. And there is plenty of both.
The dim grows and starts to form itself, becomes an outline of light. We pass Bush League casinos on the side of the highway, places for people who can't wait to get to the big casinos or need to make one last bet on their way out. We pass lonely gas stations, a ramshackle souvenir shop, one or two fast food restaurants. The light rises, becomes brighter, more defined, and very suddenly, we cross a line that separates an empty desert from a manic city. We turn onto the strip. Both sides of the street are lined with massive, sprawling buildings, covered in neon. It's night and dark, but looks like it's day. Leonard looks back at me.
Welcome to the strip.
Wow.
When you see some place you want to stay, let me know.
Aren't we staying at your house?
My house is a mess, all packed up, boxes everywhere. I've been living in hotels.
Where?
All over the place. I move all the time. Think it's nice to mix it up.
What do you recommend?
Whatever catches your eye.
I look out the window. Cassius climbs on my lap. He looks out the window. I ask him where he wants to stay. He licks my face. We drive. I see a huge black pyramid, bigger than those in Egypt, lights twinkling behind it. I see a ridiculous version of King Arthur's castle. I see New York City rebuilt. A roller coaster winds its way through skyscrapers. I see what Leonard says is the biggest hotel in the world, 5,000 rooms, everyone offering the finest amenities. I see Monte Carlo, New Orleans, a hotel for pirates, a pink flamingo and a palace built in the image of Rome, though it doesn't look like the Rome I saw in Italy. I see the old-timey places, the new-timey places, big places, giant places, absurdly humongous places, run-down places, sparkling places, expensive places, bottomed-out places. When we reach the end of the strip, we enter a dark area of grimy streets lined with convenience stores, hotels renting rooms by the hour, warehouses and hookers. I see another area of light a mile or so away. I ask Leonard what it is. He says downtown Vegas. I ask him what it's like. He says faded, lost, and forgotten. I turn back, look down the strip. It is a perpetual wall of light. I look at Leonard. Speak. Which place is the most ridiculous? Leonard speaks.
That's the tough question. What do you think, Snap?
Snapper speaks.
Excalibur has a magical medieval castle, a moat, and a fire-breathing dragon. Circus Circus has exotic performing animals and the Adventure Dome theme park. Mirage has the indoor jungle. Barbary Coast and Treasure Island are both full of pirates and buccaneers. They're all fucking ridiculous.
Leonard looks back at me.
They're all fucking ridiculous, my son. All of them.
Where do they have the best food?
Snapper speaks.
The Grand.
Leonard speaks.
I agree. Best food is at the Grand.
Let's go there. Snapper nods, pulls away. We start driving back down the strip. I stare back out the window, pay less attention to the buildings and more attention to the people. The hundreds of people, thousands, tens of thousands of people on the sidewalks, on footbridges that lead back and forth over the strip, in front of the casinos, walking in and out. I stare at the people, some looking around in awe, some happily chatting, some worried, some quickly walking, a few crying. I see Elvis. I see a couple just married. He's in a tux, she's in white. I see hookers lingering. I see a family hand in hand, mother, father, four little children. I see a woman in a wheelchair, an old man with a cane, a blind man tapping, a preacher pounding and screaming, a hustler dealing cards. People know they're going to lose, but they play anyway. I see old, young, white, black, yellow, red, rich, poor. They're all looking for more, more, more. They're all the same, and they all want more. We pull up to the Grand. The entrance lives up to its name. As soon as the car stops, it is surrounded by valets. Leonard waves them off, Snapper pulls away, parks the car. Instead of walking toward the doors, Leonard turns and walks toward the sidewalk. I have Cassius on a leash. We follow him. He stops, speaks.
I want to tell you something before we go inside.
Okay.
You see all this?
He motions up and down the street. Yeah, I see it.
It's all a fucking charade. Built to lure you in, tempt you, tease you, make you starry-eyed and dumb, make you think it's yours for the taking if you just throw down those next few bucks.
He turns to me.
You can do what you want, but the way I do it is I decide on a sum. The sum is an amount I won't miss. I play it until I'm either happy with my winnings or I lose it all. I never go over, never spend more. The reason I do this is because this...
He motions up and down the strip again.
This was not built on losses. It was not built on losses. You understand?
The casino always wins. He nods.
Yeah. The casino always wins. Goddamn sons of bitches. They should let me always win.
I laugh. He smiles. He turns back toward the entrance.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. We walk to the entrance, step into a huge revolving door. It is silent between the swinging panes. For a second or two, it's beautiful, light and silent. I step out of the door into the lobby, into flashing lights, into noise from slot machines, into music, into laughing and cheering, into the blast of air conditioning, into plush carpeting, into 30-foot ceilings, into madness. Cassius looks around, appears slightly confused. Leonard steps in behind us, walks toward the reception desk. We follow him. He arrives at the desk, asks for someone. The woman asks for his name. He gives it to her. She makes a call. 30 seconds later, a man in a suit steps out of an office behind the desk, greets Leonard, shakes his hand. The man says, "It's great to see you again. How can I help you?" Leonard tells him he'd like to stay for the night. The man asks if anyone will be with him. Leonard says, "We'll be three." Man asks if we have any bags. Leonard says, "No, we'll be purchasing whatever we need." The man says, "Excellent. Let me know if I can help you in any way." Leonard says, "Please order a large porterhouse steak cooked well and a bowl of water and have them sent to our room immediately." The man looks at Cassius and laughs, says, "Of course," and steps to the desk, speaks with one of his co-workers. Snapper joins us. The man steps away from the desk, says, "Follow me." We go to an elevator. We ride to the top floor. We need a key to open the elevator door. We step into a hall. A long hall with thick carpet, low lights, subtle neutral paint, and two doors. One on each side of the hall, just two doors. The man leads us to one of the doors, opens it, holds the door, we go into the room. It is not a room, not a suite, not an apartment. It is a mansion in the sky, a beautiful series of rooms, bedrooms, dining room, living room, multimedia room, den, kitchen, bar, sitting room. There are windows in every room offering views of the strip of Vegas, of the desert. The furniture looks like it belongs in a museum. The carpet is soft and thick, the drapes long and thick. The glasses at the bar, crystal, the refrigerators stocked. The man gives a brief tour, gives us a card, tells us to please call him if he can do anything for us. He leaves. I let Cassius off his leash. He starts running around, smelling things. I look at Leonard. This is incredible.
It's not bad.
What's something like this go for?
It doesn't.
It's free?
Yup.
You pay nothing?
Doubt anyone who stayed here has paid for it.
Suite for high rollers?
High rollers, VIPs, and people like me.
You're not a high roller or a VIP?
I'm something else. Something that exists here but isn't often acknowledged to exist.
International superstar? He laughs.
More like someone you don't want to piss off.
I laugh. Are we expected to spend a bunch of money in the casino?
They're going to take care of us and provide us with whatever we want, regardless of how much money we blow in the casino.
Whatever we want? Leonard smiles.
Yeah, and you can get exotic in your requests if you would like.
How exotic?
As exotic as you can imagine.
I laugh again. Snapper walks into the room, says he's hungry. Leonard asks if I'm hungry, I say yes. He asks if we want to eat in the room or in a restaurant. We decide to go to a restaurant. We wait for Cassius's steak. When it arrives, I cut it into small pieces. He eats it in about 2 seconds. I give him the bone. He takes it, runs around the room a couple of times, jumps onto the couch, starts chewing. He looks happy, like he'll be occupied for hours. We leave the room, take the elevator back downstairs, walk around, try to decide where we're going to eat. There are about 20 different restaurants. We go to a steakhouse. Snapper and I both have huge slabs of prime rib with spinach and hash browns. Leonard has a salad. After dinner, we go to the casino. Leonard wants to shoot craps. I have no idea how to do it. Leonard tries to explain. I say, "Don't worry about it. Just give me the dice and let me throw." He laughs, hands me the dice. I start to throw, and my, oh my, do I fucking throw. Leonard handles the betting, and we win again and again. We start to accumulate a large stack of chips and a crowd around our table. With each throw, the crowd either cheers or groans, and we get many more cheers. I keep throwing, throwing. We keep accumulating. I have no idea how much we have, at least 10 times what we started with. We look at the pile and laugh. Leonard says, "You're my good luck charm, my son. Let's quit while we're ahead." We quit, cash out the chips. We have over $10,000 in 50s and 100s. Leonard asks me if I'm okay with money. I say, "Yeah, I'm doing well." He says, "If you don't need it, let's give it away." We leave the casino, walk out to the strip. We walk, look. We give $1,000 to an elderly couple. We give $1,000 to a couple who just got married. We find some homeless men. They're drunk. We give them a few $100 each. We see a family. Their car is broken down. We give them a couple thousand. We hand out money to whoever we see that looks like they're down, depressed, who looks like a few bucks will make them happier. Some of the people are thrilled, thank us, can't believe their luck. Some of them don't want the money, think we want something in exchange. Some of them take it and quietly walk away. When we have $1,000 or so left, Leonard says we're keeping the rest for later. We're going to need some throwaway money. I ask him why. He says there's big fun coming, my son. Big ass motherfucking fun. We walk back to the hotel. Snapper is having a drink with his girlfriend. Leonard wants to join them. I say, "Let's give them some privacy." He says, "No, they're expecting us." We walk to a small, quiet bar. Aside from the rooms, it is probably the only quiet space in the entire complex. Snapper is sitting at a table for four with a small blonde woman. They stand as we enter. Leonard speaks.
"Look at Olivia, the most beautiful girl in the world."
The blonde woman smiles. It is a shy smile. Leonard gives her a hug. They separate.
"Olivia, this is my son, James. James, this is Olivia, the most beautiful girl in the world."
She smiles again, the same smile. She's short, thin, has dark brown eyes, sandy blonde hair. Her hands are soft, her nails immaculate. She wears a black skirt and a black blouse. She's beautiful in a simple, natural way, as if her beauty is something that she doesn't think about or let worry her. We shake hands, say hello, sit down. She looks at me, speaks. "Dominic has told me a lot about you."
"Dominic?"
Snapper speaks. She doesn't like my professional name. I laugh. I don't blame her. She smiles.
"Are you having fun in Vegas?"
"Yeah, I am."
"You have good guides."
I laugh again. "Yeah, I do." We sit, talk, laugh. Olivia is from Albuquerque, where her parents, Italian immigrants, opened a pizza parlor. She grew up working in the parlor, put herself through school, got her job in the casino when she graduated, has been there for 6 years. I ask her how she met Dominic. She says she has a dog, a big, sweet, dumb-as-dirt Newfoundland who got off his leash one day and started wandering around the neighborhood. Dominic found him and brought him home. She says he seemed shy and nervous and sweet, and she thought he was handsome, so she asked him out. They went to dinner and a movie that night. She took him to a romantic chick flick to see if he could deal with it, and he laughed when he was supposed to laugh and clapped at the end. They had coffee afterwards, and when he took her home at the end of the night, Dominic didn't try to kiss her. She hoped he would ask her out again, or ask her for her number, but it didn't happen, and she went to sleep disappointed. The next day, when she got home from work, there was an envelope at her door. Inside the envelope, on a piece of handmade paper, someone had carefully transcribed a poem by Emily Dickinson called "It's All I Have to Bring Today." And beneath the poem, there was a phone number. She called the number, and Dominic answered, and she smiles and says, "We've been together ever since." At the end of the story, Leonard laughs, looks at Snapper, speaks. "You still remember the poem, Dominic?" "Of course I do." "Recite it for James." "No way." "Come on." "Only for Olivia." "When did that become policy?" Olivia looks at Leonard, speaks. "When I said so." Leonard laughs.
"Since when are you the boss?"
"When he's with you, you're the boss. When he's with me, I'm the boss."
"What about when he's with both of us?"
Olivia smiles. "We both know the answer to that one, Leonard." Everyone laughs. Olivia smiles and nods, holds her hands over her head like she's a champion. We finish our drinks. Olivia says she needs to go home. Snapper asks Leonard if we're okay without him for the night. Leonard says, "Yeah, we're fine." Everyone stands. Olivia hugs Leonard and me. She and Snapper leave. Leonard looks at me, speaks.
"You tired?"
"What time is it?"
"Time doesn't matter here. You sleep when you're tired, not when a clock tells you you should sleep."
"Is there anything else to do?"
"A friend of mine owns a strip club. I kept that dough so you could live in lap dance heaven for a couple of hours."
"You gonna join me?"
"I'm not much of a lap dance man."
"I would have thought you liked them."
"Nope."
"Fuck it then."
"You sure?"
"Lap dances are fun when your buddy's sitting next to you and everyone's laughing. There's something dark and sad about them when you're there alone, hoping for something you're not going to get." Leonard laughs.
"I could arrange that you get it."
"That's dark and sad, too." He laughs again.
"So what do you want to do?"
"Is there anything I've missed?"
"Is there anything you haven't seen that you want to see?"
"No."
"We could go see a Sinatra imitator, or we could go to an all-night, all-you-can-eat buffet."
"I'm good."
"What do you want to do with the last 1,000?
"I don't care."
"Let's put it on red or black and go to sleep."
"Red."
"Fine with me."
We go back to the casino, bet red, win, bet red, win. We leave with $4,000. We go back to the suite. Cassius is sleeping on the couch. The bone is resting next to his sizable head. I wake him up. We thank Leonard for a great night. A ridiculous night. We thank him. We go to our room. The bed is huge. The sheets are soft. We go to sleep. Cassius and I go home, back to our little house in the hills. I spend my time in front of a computer. He spends his time in front of the TV. We go for walks 3 times a day, once in the morning, once in the afternoon, once at night. I eat most of my meals at home. I rarely go out with my friends. I read for 3 or 4 hours before I go to bed. I have a good life, a simple life. For the first time in my life, I'm happy and secure and stable. My fury, which has shaped most of the 25 years of my life, has faded without the fuel of drugs and alcohol.
has faded as I have learned not to hate myself. Part of me is humbled by this life, this beautiful life. Another part of me feels incredibly fortunate. Part of me is waiting to fuck it up somehow, waiting to make some dumbass decision that destroys it, waiting for it to end. Part of me feels like it isn't complete without Lily. This is what she and I dreamed of having together. Sometimes I pretend she's here with me. I talk to an empty chair across the table. I wrap my arms around nothingness and tell her I love her. I tell her I'll be home in a little while when I leave. I tell her I'm tired and want to go to bed at the end of the long day. Even without her, I have all I need. My little house, my big funny dog, my legally earned money, my time, my own time, my own precious time to do whatever I want to do. I have simple things, a simple life. All I need. Leonard goes east for his annual attempt at a tea time on the golf course where his father worked. I see a drunk movie star drive his Porsche into a tree going 10 miles an hour. He gets out of the car and starts kicking the door, starts screaming, "Nobody understands. Nobody understands." Cassius becomes friends with a squirrel who lives in a tree above our yard. He sits and watches the squirrel jump from limb to limb, watches him collect acorns, watches him chatter and squeak. He spends hours watching the squirrel. I think Cassius is lonely. I see a famous young actress, a shockingly beautiful young actress, gorging at a fast food restaurant. She disappears into the bathroom after eating 6 cheeseburgers. I finish another script. I like it. I see a famous director throw an omelet at a waitress while screaming, "Onions aren't mushrooms. Onions aren't fucking mushrooms." The waitress walks away with egg in her hair, on her neck, on her shirt, tears in her eyes, her hands are shaking. A minute or two later, the manager of the restaurant walks over and apologizes to the director, says, "The meal's on us. Please tell me what else I can get for you." My friend Danny calls from Chicago, tells me he hates his job, wants to do something new. I tell him to come to Los Angeles. It's the land of opportunity. He says, "What would I do?" I say, "Let's raise some money and we'll make a movie." He says, "That's crazy." I say, "It's crazier staying in a job you hate." He says, "You're right. I'm coming to Los Angeles." Cassius and I are at the veterinarian's office. Cassius is having a regular semi-annual checkup. The vet asks me if I would ever consider having another dog. I look at Cassius, ask him. He wags his tail, says, yes, daddy, let's get another dog, please, daddy, yes. The vet says she has a young female pit bull that she found in a box behind a convenience store. I say, "Bring her out." The vet leaves, comes back 2 minutes later with a small, brindle pit bull. Her ears are sticking up, her tail is wagging. Cassius licks her. They start jumping around, barking and yelping. I ask the vet if she has a name. The vet tells me she calls the little dog Bella. I say, "Welcome to the family, Bella. I'm your new dad. The big boy is your new brother." A girl I know from school calls me, asks me if I want to have dinner. I say, "Yeah, sure, I'll have dinner." Her name is Connor. She's 6'2". She likes a nice, strong cocktail, and she likes to laugh. I ask her where we're going. She tells me it's a bar that serves decent food in an outdoor courtyard. I ask her if anyone is coming with us. She asks me if I remember her friend Allison. I ask if it's Allison, skinny Allison, and she laughs and says, "Yes, that's her." And I say, "Yeah, I remember Allison." I ask her what time. She says 8. I work all day, take a shower, get dressed. I think about skinny Allison on and off. She was tall as I am. She had long, dark blonde hair, olive skin. The first time I saw her, she was 18, but looked 14. And in the 2 years we were at school together, she never aged. She was thin, long thin, delicate thin, fragile thin, thin like a runway model. Thin, the type that food wouldn't affect, thin that was somehow natural for her, as if her body would gain weight as she got older. I saw her occasionally. She was usually with Connor. We never spoke. I never tried to speak to her because I knew she wanted nothing to do with me. She was from a nice, traditional Southern family. She did well in school. I imagined she would find a handsome, successful, stable man and live in a big house and have a beautiful family. Cassius and Bella are sitting on the couch. I stop, say goodbye to them. They wag their tails and look up at me. If they could talk, they'd say, "Go on and leave, Daddy. We're going to have fun tonight without you. Maybe we'll eat a pillow or chew our bones or try to catch squirrels or watch TV. Go on, Daddy. Leave." I give them hugs, walk out to my truck, drive down the hill to the bar. I walk into the bar, look around. I see Connor sitting at a table. I walk toward the table. Allison is sitting next to Connor. They stand as I approach them. I hesitate as I walk, blink a couple of times, try to keep my jaw from dropping, my knees from buckling, my eyes from popping out. Allison is not skinny Allison anymore. She's still thin, but her body has filled out. There are curves, beautiful curves. Her hair is longer, more blonde. She's wearing light blue leather pants, a white t-shirt. She's no longer a girl. She's become a woman. A gorgeous, voluptuous woman. Men all over the bar are staring at her. I'm staring at her. I stop at the table, speak. "Hi." Connor speaks. "Hi, you remember Allison?" I look at Allison. "Hi." She speaks. "Hi." "Long time." "Yeah." "How you been?" "Great. You?" I laugh. "Been a long couple of years." She nods. "So I've heard." We sit. They're both drinking white wine. I order a nice cold cola. I talk to Allison, ask her about her life. She's been living in Vale for the last 2 years, teaching skiing and working in an art gallery. She loves Vale, but wants to move. Feels like 2 years in a ski town is long enough. That it's time to become an adult. I ask her where she wants to go. She says she isn't sure. Maybe San Francisco. Maybe Santa Fe. Maybe Washington, D.C. I ask her what she wants to do. She says she needs to figure it out. Maybe teach. Maybe try to be a painter. Maybe go back to school for landscape architecture. She asks me about my life. I say it's good. Never been better. She asks if it's true I got locked up. I tell her yes. She asks what I'm doing in Los Angeles. I tell her. She asks if I like Los Angeles. I say more and more every day. I ask her why it's not on her list of potential residences. She says she just can't imagine living here. We order dinner. They get salads. I get a big, fat fucking cheeseburger. We keep talking. I ask about painting, why she does it. She says she does it because when she is actually painting, she forgets about the rest of the world, forgets about problems and insecurities, about failures and an uncertain future. About everything, she just loses herself and paints. I ask who she paints like. She says she tries to paint like herself. I ask her who she likes. She says Matisse and Van Gogh. I ask her why. She says because Matisse paints beautifully and Van Gogh paints painfully. When the food comes, I can't eat. Allison intimidates me, makes me nervous, takes away my appetite. I take a few bites of the burger, try to look away from her, try to focus on Connor, try to seem cool and secure and distant, even though I don't feel cool or secure, even though I don't want to be distant. What I want is to be next to her, to hold her, to be inside of her, to devour her, to disappear within her, to become part of her somehow, to become part of her. Part of what I feel is purely physical, a desire, an urge, a desperate clawing need. Part of what I feel is something else, something that makes me smile, feel empty and full, makes my heart hurt. We finish dinner. I pay the bill. They both thank me. We stand, walk out. We wait for our cars at the valet. Connor asks me what I'm doing for the rest of the night. I tell her I'm going home, getting in bed, reading a book. Allison asks me what I'm reading. I tell her Paul Bowles. She asks me which book. I tell her The Sheltering Sky. She smiles, says she loves Paul Bowles, loves that book. I tell her I'll give her my report when I'm done. She smiles, says I'll look forward to it. Our cars arrive. I ask them what they're doing tomorrow. Connor says she's not sure. I tell her to call me, that I might take my dogs for a walk in the hills, that they can come if they want. She says, cool. We get in our cars. We leave. I drive home, and every second of the drive is spent thinking about Allison, about how she looked in the first instant I saw her, about how she laughed. She has a quiet, shy laugh. About her smiles. She smiles like she's hiding something. About her leather pants, her curves, about painting. I want to watch her paint. About her reading. I want to watch her read. About the skinny girl that isn't skinny anymore. About what she would look like next to me, with me, beneath me, on top of me. About how she scares me. She fucking terrifies me. I get home. The dogs are already asleep on top of my bed. I get into bed. I stare at the ceiling. I think about Allison. I close my eyes. I think about Allison. I fall asleep, thinking about Allison. I wake up thinking about her. I try to work. I can't work. I walk the dogs. I want to go home. I'm worried Connor might call. I don't want to miss it. I brew some coffee. My hand quivers as I drink it. I try to read. The words make no sense. I smoke cigarettes and stare at the wall and think about her. I hope Connor calls. I want to see Allison again. Connor calls. We agree to go for a hike in the hills. I ask the dogs if they want to go out. They jump up and down, wag their tails, run in circles. I ask them if they want to meet a girl Daddy likes. They don't care. I ask them if they want to go bye-bye in the car. They start barking. We meet, go for our hike. I let the dogs off their leashes. They run away. It's hot. I take off my shirt. Allison asks about my tattoos. I tell her they're like scars. They remind me of things I've done, of how I want to live and how I don't want to live. Allison says I have a lot of scars. She smiles and she reaches out and runs her finger along the top of my left arm, along a faded black outline. She doesn't speak, just runs her finger along my arm, along my arm, along my arm. We agree to meet for dinner. They're going to come to my house. I'll drive us all to a nearby restaurant. They arrive, we go to a local Italian place, we eat. Connor and Allison drink wine, I drink cola. We stay for 3 or 4 hours. I don't want to leave Allison. I want to sit with her for the rest of the night, tomorrow, all of next week, for the next month, year. The bill comes. I pay. We go back to my house. I have a few bottles of wine in the house for people who want to drink. Connor and Allison open one of them. We sit in the backyard. It's a beautiful California night. Warm, still, quiet, clear. They drink. We smoke. We talk about friends from school, where they are, what they're doing, how they're doing. Some are doing well, some are disasters, some have faded away. I ask Allison why we were never friends at school. She laughs and says because you were psychotic and I was scared of you. I ask her if she's still scared of me. She says, you're like your dogs. You appear kind and sweet and gentle, but I don't think I'd like to make you angry. I ask her if that means she's still scared of me. She says she hasn't decided yet. I tell her to let me know if there's anything I can do to ease her fears. She smiles, says okay. It gets late, 2 or 3. Connor wants to go home. She's drunk. I tell her she shouldn't drive. They should stay here. They can have my room. I'll sleep on the couch. Connor wants to leave. She walks out. Allison follows her. I hear them arguing. I hear car doors open. I hear them close. I hear Connor's car start, pull away. I hear a knock. I walk to the door, open it. Allison is standing in front of me. She speaks. There's something you can do. What do you mean? To help ease my fear of you. What's that? She smiles. Invite me in. I'll show you.
We have breakfast, lunch, dinner. She stays the night again. We spend all the next day together. She stays the night again. She changes her flight so she can stay longer. She picks up her bags from Connor. We spend 3 more days together. We take the dogs for walks through the hills. We go to a gourmet grocery store. Allison cooks a fancy dinner. We go to the movies, sit in the back row, hold hands, share popcorn, whisper to each other. We go see a band, sit in the back row, hold hands, whisper to each other. We lie in bed for hours, talking, kissing, exploring each other. We lie in bed and stare at each other. Her eyes are the same pale green as mine. We lie in bed and we look into each other. I convince her to stay for 3 more days. We drive up the coast. We get a room in a beachfront hotel. We have plans to walk on the sand, swim in the ocean, sit in the sun, eat every meal outside. We never leave the room. We spend 3 days kissing, touching, exploring, discovering. We spend 3 days talking, whispering, laughing. We spend 3 days falling in love, and I fall truly, deeply and absolutely in love with her. I fall in love with everything about her. I love her mind, body, smile. I love her walk, long and graceful. Her voice, soft and reserved. I love how she smokes, eats. I love her accent. Certain words have a faint southern twang. I love the books she reads, Paul Bowles and Jack Kerouac. The painters she admires, Matisse, Van Gogh, and Michelangelo. I love that she went abroad alone, lived in Florence, and went to school. I love that she loves my dogs, that she's not scared of me anymore, that she makes fun of me and my past, says I'm nothing like what she expected, that I'm soft and sweet, that I'm nothing like the monster she heard about. I love that I have never felt anything similar to what I feel when I'm inside of her. It's calm, strength, peace, fulfillment, fearlessness, abandon, satisfaction. It's something I never knew with Lily, have never known with anyone. I love when I am near her. I have to touch her, have to kiss her, have to have my arms around her, have her close to me, next to me, touching me. I love that when I'm with her, everything else disappears. I don't think, care, wonder, or worry about anything but her. We go back to Los Angeles. Allison says she needs to go home. I ask her to stay. Tell her I want her to stay. Please, Allison, stay with me. She has to go home. She doesn't know when she'll be back. I drive her to the airport. I walk her to the gate. I kiss her goodbye. I'm in love with her. Please, Allison, stay. The phone rings. I pick it up. Hello?
My son! My son! My son!
What's up, Leonard?
Where the fuck have you been?
Around.
Around my ass. I've left about 10 messages.
I haven't checked them. Everything okay?
Yeah, but you missed lunch.
I didn't know you were back. Didn't know we were having lunch.
Because you didn't check your fucking messages.
I laugh. Sorry. How was it out east?
No good.
That sucks.
I've decided I'm going to have the entire course fucking torched. Burned to the fucking ground.
Really?
No. Fuck no. But I didn't get on and I'm pissed.
Sorry.
What have you been doing?
Met a girl.
Who?
Her name's Allison.
Nice name. How'd you meet her?
I went to school with her. Knew who she was there. She was out here visiting a friend of hers, and we all had dinner.
And?
And we had dinner the next night. Then she stayed with me for 5 days. Then we went to Santa Barbara for 3 days. Then she went home.
My son. Oh, my son. This sounds serious.
Maybe.
Are you in love with her?
Madly.
Have you told her?
No.
Why didn't you tell her?
I don't know.
Why'd you let her go home?
I don't know.
Are you ready for something like this?
I feel like I am.
You're over Lily enough to be with someone else?
I feel like I am.
I feel like I am isn't good enough. If you're going to tell this Allison that you love her, you need to be sure.
Who said I'm going to tell her that I love her?
Are you sure?
Why do you need to know?
I don't need to know. You need to know. Are you ready to love someone, and are you sure about her?
Yeah, I'm ready, and yeah, I'm sure.
I assume you have Allison's phone number.
Yeah.
We're going to hang up. You're going to call her. You're going to tell her that you love her, that you want her to move to Los Angeles, that you can't live without her. Then we're having dinner.
I laugh. What if she doesn't love me, or she doesn't want to move here?
Then we will have a miserable dinner.
I laugh again.
We're hanging up now, my son.
Okay.
And you're going to call her.
Okay.
And then you're going to call me back and we'll make dinner plans.
Sounds good. I call Allison. My hands are shaking. I can see my heart beating. I can hardly speak. I call her. She answers the phone. We talk for a few minutes. I wonder if she can tell I'm nervous, scared. I wonder if she can tell I'm shaking. I hope not. I tell her that I love her. I tell her that I want her to move to Los Angeles. I tell her that I don't want to live without her. I tell her that I love her. I love her. I love her. I fly to Virginia. I'm going to spend a week with Allison's family, help her pack, drive across the country with her. She picks me up at the airport. I see her, grab her, hold her, kiss her, tell her I've missed her. I'm so happy to see her. I love her. Her parents live in Virginia Beach. They live in a big, beautiful southern house with white columns and a wide porch. On one side is a golf course, on the other side is a quiet inlet of the Atlantic Ocean. They're conservative southerners, people who believe in God, family, tradition. I like them. They seem to like me. I don't swear around them, never let them see my tattoos, avoid discussions about my past. I stay in a room on the side of the house opposite Allison's room. Every chance I get, I drag her into closets, into bathrooms, into the attic. We sneak out of our rooms at night, meet in the kitchen, in the living room, outside on the grass. I play golf with her father, go shopping with her and her mother. We go to the country club for dinner. Allison and I ride bikes, take walks along the beach. It's a nice week, a mellow week. It feels like what our life could be like in a few years if we get married and live somewhere other than Los Angeles. It's an image I like. It feels happy, comfortable. It feels right as any life I've ever imagined. At the end of the week, we pack the car, have a last breakfast with her parents. They cry and wave as we pull away. We've mapped out our trip in an atlas. We're going a zigzaggy route that takes us through the southern United States. We're going to take our time at least a week, maybe two. Our first stop is Richmond. We stay with Allison's brother, who is a lawyer for a large tobacco company. I met him in Paris several years ago. We had drinks together a few times. When I left Paris, I ended up in rehab and jail. When he left, he went to law school. He's tall, blonde, handsome. He wears pressed pants, starched shirts, lives in a pristine apartment. I imagine that he keeps an accurate checkbook and pays his taxes on time. He takes us out for dinner, says he's tired of Richmond, is tired of living in such a conservative environment, is thinking of moving. I ask him where he wants to go. He says he's not sure, maybe Los Angeles. I offer to throw his shit in Allison's trailer. He can come with us. He declines. From Richmond, we go to Washington, D.C. We walk around Georgetown, go to the National Gallery. Allison takes me to a bathing suit store. She wants to buy me a leopard print Speedo. I ask her why. She says, because it's funny. I try one on, walk around the store, ask the other customers what they think of it. Most ignore me. Two gay men tell me I look great. An elderly woman tells me to get away from her before she calls the police. I wear the Speedo as we drive out of town. We decide to go to Memphis. Halfway there, we stop at a cheap motel. We get a big room with a big bed. It's the first time we've been truly alone since my arrival. We take advantage of it. We arrive in Memphis, tour Graceland, eat barbecue, listen to the blues on Beale Street. I feel bad for Elvis dying on the toilet in his big, silly, lonely house. I eat barbecue until I can hardly walk. I dig the blues, and at times have known the blues, but not right now. Not right now. We drive south through Tennessee and Mississippi. I walk into a backwater truck stop wearing the Speedo. Truckers want to kick my ass. The clerk laughs and asks me if I'm going to the beach. Further south to New Orleans, we see my friend, Miles Davis. Not the trumpet player, Miles Davis, my friend from rehab, the Honorable Miles Davis, federal judge. Miles was my roommate at rehab. We spent a lot of sleepless nights talking, listening to music. He plays the clarinet he would play when he couldn't sleep. He helped me deal with my legal problems, talked to people for me, made calls for me, and helped me avoid a stretch in prison. Aside from Leonard, he's the only person I knew there who is still clean. The rest of our friends are either locked up or dead. We stay in New Orleans for 3 days. I meet Miles' wife. She's a doctor. We have a huge Cajun dinner with her and Miles. We go to a bar in the French Quarter, where the waitresses look like beautiful women, but are all men. We drink strong coffee, eat beignets, watch ragged magicians perform, and drunk guitarists play, and fortune tellers speculate and lie. We listen to jazz at night in dark, smoky bars, where the best musicians in the world play out their lives in obscurity. We walk through the gardens of former plantations. The owners are still white, the help is still black. Doesn't seem like much has changed. We eat snow cones in the ghetto. We wander through the zoo. What's up, orangutan? I like that crazy hair. I'm sad to leave. Sad to say goodbye to Miles. I could live in New Orleans. I don't mind the heat and noise and dirt. It's a beautiful, decrepit, debauched, disintegrating paradise. We drive north, cross into Texas, decide to try and make it across in one shot. Allison buys some books. We turn off the radio. She starts reading to me. 14 hours later, we're through 2 books, both Paul Bowles, a gallon of coffee, 3 packs of cigarettes, and I can't see straight. 4 more hours, and we're in Santa Fe. We see Allison's friends, walk through the mountains, spend a day at a spa, get massages, swim in hot springs. Allison gets treatments, I have no idea what. I just sit and read a book. We go to Vegas. We're both tired. We don't leave the room. We drive from Vegas to Los Angeles. We pull up to the house. Cassius and Bella have been staying with a friend. He dropped them at the house earlier in the day. As I walk to the door, I can hear them barking. I don't know if they can smell me or hear me, but they know I'm home. I open the door. They jump up and down, run in circles. Cassius pees himself. They give us kisses. I tell them, Daddy's home now. He isn't going away again. I tell them, Daddy has Mommy with him. She isn't going away again. Allison smiles. I look at her, put my arms around her, kiss her neck, speak. I love you, and I'm happy you're here, and I don't want you going away again. Allison's parents don't want her living with me until we're engaged. We're not ready to get engaged. She moves in with Connor. Their apartment is at the bottom of the hill, about 5 minutes from my house. Danny and I start trying to raise money for a movie. We call every wealthy person we know. We tell them we have a great investment opportunity for them. Some of them actually write us checks. Allison starts working as an assistant for a producer at a studio. The producer is the son of the head of the studio and has never actually produced anything, but has a big office and a large expense account. I keep trying to write a book. I spend most of my time smoking and drinking coffee and playing with the dogs and swearing. Allison and I walk into a coffee shop. We see an ex-girlfriend of mine sitting at a table. The ex-girlfriend sees us. We all went to school together. The ex-girlfriend and Allison know each other. I haven't seen the ex for 3 years. We split on terrible terms. The last time we saw each other, I was bleeding, beaten, in handcuffs on my way to jail. I look at her. She looks the same. Arctic blue eyes, long, thick blonde hair. I say hello. She says hello. Allison says hello. She says hello to Allison. I have wondered what happened to her, where she was, what it would be like to see her. I feel nothing. I could give two shits about her. Allison and I order our coffees and we sit outside and smoke and laugh and look at each other, and when the ex leaves, none of us bother to say goodbye. A yappy little beagle bites Cassius on the ass while I'm walking him and Bella down our street. The beagle snarls and barks, jumps at Cassius, looks like he's going to bite him again. Cassius tries to ignore the beagle, but the beagle keeps coming until Cassius lunges at him, puts his entire head in his mouth, shakes him a couple of times, and tosses him a few feet away. The beagle shakes it off, appears to be fine, and runs away. Allison and I are together every night. Most of the time we're at my house, once in a while we're at her apartment. She is the first person I have completely loved. I love her physically, emotionally. I love everything about her. I love her more every day. More every day. Sometimes I wonder if this is it, what my life would have been like if Lily had lived. Sometimes I feel guilty because I'm happy. Sometimes I hate myself because when I'm with Allison, I stop thinking about Lily. And I stop missing her. Leonard wants to meet Allison. I invite him over for dinner. Tell him we'll cook for him. He laughs. Calls me a domesticated motherfucker. Asks me what I know how to cook. I tell him absolutely nothing. Allison's in charge. He laughs again. Says he'd love to come. I ask him if tomorrow is cool. He says yeah. Allison and I go to the fancy gourmet grocery store. She has a list. She tells me what to get. She checks to make sure I've picked up the right items. She double checks as we wait in line. She starts preparing the food in the afternoon. She makes a salad, mashed potatoes, and apple pie. While she's in the kitchen, I clean the house. I sweep the floors, mop the floors, scrub every surface in the bathroom, wash the sheets, wash the futon cover, pick up all the dog shit in the backyard and throw it in the woods. The smells coming from the kitchen make me hungry, make me want to eat. I take regular breaks to go into the kitchen and try to snack. Allison kicks me out. I try again. She kicks me out again. We take showers, put on nice clothes, survey the house to make sure everything is in order, survey the kitchen to make sure everything is on schedule. Allison knows about Leonard, knows what he does and who he is, knows about my relationship with him, knows how much he means to me. We both want tonight to go well. She's nervous. I know Leonard will like her. I know she'll like him, though she may be slightly intimidated by him. We hear a car pull up, the dogs start barking, car door opens, knock, knock, knock. I open the door. Leonard is standing there with a huge bouquet of flowers, two bottles of wine, one white, one red. He speaks. My son. Come on in, Leonard. Leonard steps into the house. Allison is in my bedroom. Leonard looks around, speaks loudly so that Allison can hear him.
I knew it. I knew it. This beautiful, perfect woman was all a delusion. An invention. She doesn't exist.
I laugh.
I was always suspicious. This Allison sounded too good to be true. No one can be everything you said she is. Gorgeous, smart, well-read, knowledgeable in the history of art, and willing to tolerate you. It's impossible. Impossible!
Allison walks out of the bedroom. Leonard sees her.
Oh, my.
Allison smiles. Hi, Leonard. I'm Allison. I've heard a lot about you. It's nice to meet you. Leonard drops to one knee.
My lady, you're a vision. May I offer you flowers, and may I offer you wine. Red, if you please. White, if you please.
Allison laughs, takes the flowers and wine. Thank you.
May I stand?
She laughs again. Of course. Leonard stands. Allison walks into the kitchen, puts the flowers in a vase. I follow her. Ask her what kind of wine she wants. She says red. I open the bottle. Ask Leonard if he wants a cola. He says, no, I stopped drinking cola. Just water for me. I pour Allison a glass of wine, Leonard a glass of water, a glass of cola for me. Allison puts dinner in the oven. Leonard sits down on the couch. He looks at Allison, speaks.
Pretty lady, come sit with me.
Allison smiles, looks at me. Can you handle yourself in there? Yeah. Allison sits with Leonard. I set the table, warm up the potatoes, put dressing on the salad. I hear bits of their conversation. I hear them talking about Allison's hometown, about women's clothing, which Leonard seems to know about for some reason. I hear them talking about art, about wine. I hear them laughing. I hear them talking about me. I try not to listen. I finish in the kitchen, put the salads on the table, tell them dinner is ready. They walk over. Leonard pulls out Allison's chair. We all sit down. Leonard raises a glass, speaks.
To my son, and to the beautiful, charming, intelligent young woman he has somehow convinced to spend time with him.
Allison and I laugh. We all clink glasses. We each take a sip. We eat the salad, eat dinner. Allison makes beef tenderloin, eat dessert. Leonard asks Allison what I was like before rehab. She laughs and says she doesn't really know because she tried to avoid me as much as possible. Allison asks Leonard what rehab was like. He laughs, says it was great and awful at the same time. She asks how it was great. He says, as ridiculous as it may sound, it was fun being institutionalized with a bunch of crazy drug addicts and alcoholics. We laughed a lot and told each other all kinds of crazy stories and became great friends. She asks why it was awful. He says, because nobody ends up there because they're healthy or sane or stable. Nobody ends up there because they have a good life. And it's pretty miserable dealing with all the shit we've done to ourselves and other people, and it's pretty miserable trying to figure out how not to do it again. She asks about our friends there. Leonard tells her about Ed and Ted. Ed died in a fight, and Ted is in prison for the rest of his life. About Maddie the boxer, shot dead outside a crack house. About Michael, he blew his brains out with a shotgun. About John, also now in prison for the rest of his life. Allison asks if